Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Always appreciate your support and thank you so much for being here. We've got a ton to get into today. Our main topic is going to be Jair Alexander. He's done for the year. It's a super unfortunate piece of news. It's sort of what we've kind of, maybe been semi-expecting, at least dreading the possibility slash potential of it being the case. But we get confirmation that Jair is, in fact, going to be done for the year. I know a lot of people think they know what this means for Green Bay, specifically into the future, whether he'll be back, will he not be back. There's a lot, I think, that you really need to take into consideration. There's a ton that we're going to go over in regards to this today. So make sure to stick around, especially when it comes to the salary cap conversation, because there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I want to really get a lot of clarity on that. So a ton of that stuff to discuss today. We're going to dig into all of it. Before we get there, I want to shout out Chris Rieger. Chris became an all-new Pack-A-Day Podcast, not only member, but all-pro member. Chris, I appreciate you a ton for that. Thank you so much, not only for signing up, but for becoming an all-pro member. If you guys haven't checked out memberships yet, make sure to do so. A ton of different options available, all different perks. So definitely make sure to do that. Also, we had the first injury report of the week for Packers-Bears presented by Habish, Habish, and Rotier. From a Packers standpoint, multiple players did not practice, including, of course, Jair Alexander, Zane Anderson, Brenton Cox, Andre Dillard, Quay Walker, Christian Watson, and Evan Williams. That was your full list of did not participates for Green Bay. Chris Brooks, Javon Bullard, Josh Jacobs, Elton Jenkins, and Tucker Kraft were all limited. And then Devontae Wyatt was a full participant, although was still listed with the concussion, which would lend me to believe that it's probably not completely cleared and out of protocol yet. But we'll have to kind of keep an eye on that. But he was a full participant. That's a good sign for Devontae Wyatt moving forward. For the Bears, Larry Borum did not participate due to illness. Elijah Hicks, Travis Homer, Tevin Jenkins were all did not participate due to injury. Roma Dunze also did not practice with an illness. And then Tarvarius Moore, former Packers safety, was a full participant for Chicago. Now, just like the Packers know how to bounce back from tough hits, if you've been hit with an injury after an accident, the team of highly skilled attorneys at Habish, Habish, and Rotier can help you receive the right compensation to help you bounce back from your injury. Habish has been successfully resolving claims for over 90 years, and their attorneys have the experience and expertise to get you back in the game. When you call Habish, you're going to talk to a lawyer directly. Their number is 800-242-2874 or 800-2-HABISH. You can also visit their website at habish.com. Habish, Habish, and Rotier, national reputation, hometown service. As far as what Green Bay wants to do with their starters and playing their starters in this game, it has been determined by Matt LaFleur that the starters will play in this game. Now, how much they play, we'll see. I think a lot of that's going to be dependent upon how the game is going. I'm sure Matt would beyond love if the Packers could go out, play an unbelievable game, first half, I should say, you know, be up 24-3 at halftime and feel comfortable going with Malik Willis and Emmanuel Wilson and Bo Melton and Malik Heath and Ben Sims and John Fitzpatrick and some backup offensive linemen and, you know, getting some key defenders like Xavier McKinney out of there. I'm sure he would love to do that, but it sounds like they're going to start the starters. They're going to play. They want to see some improvement from some of the sloppiness from a week ago. And I'm sure they'll kind of take it by ear from there based on how things are going. He did say that injured players, there might be a difference there. Now, a lot of players were on that did not participate list. I think there's a pretty good chance a lot of those guys don't play. Well, we know Jair's not going to play. Zane Anderson is probably going to be completely due to, you know, is he cleared from concussion protocol in time? Brenton Cox is a foot injury. That's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. Andre Dillard, same thing. Does he get cleared from concussion? And then Quay Walker, Christian Watson, Evan Williams, I would not expect to play in this one. And then limited, right? Do you finally give Elton Jenkins his day off? Because he's been kind of bothered with this injury for a while now. Josh Jacobs is limited. Do you keep him out of this game? Javon Bullard has been banged up. Do you try to get him fully healthy? Same thing with Tucker Kraft. He's been on this list for a while. Do you want to give him the day off? So like, these are going to be the interesting decisions that Green Bay has to make. As Matt LaFleur mentioned, there's only 55 guys, 53 on your active, and then two guys that you can call up. Now, they will be able to put Jair on IR, and they'll be able to call up somebody from the practice squad or sign a player if they want and fill that roster spot. So that gives them one more player. But there's only so many guys that they have. So there's only so many guys that can rest. You can't go into a game with 25 guys and be like, hey, go out and do it. Do your best, guys. You know, it's not possible. So a large chunk of these players are going to play, but how much guys like Jacobs, Kraft, Jordan Love, Xavier McKinney, Rashawn Gary, those type of players play is going to be very, very interesting. But they will start, at least anyone that's healthy will start, according to Matt LaFleur. As far as how I feel about that, I thought Matt answered this about as like almost the exact way that I would want to do it. It was close at least. And that's like, he basically said the right way is the way that works. And what he's meaning and what I totally agree with is you are damned if you do, damned if you don't. It just better work out the way that you want it to. And I talk about this all the time in preseason. Like in preseason, I've talked about so many times, if you play a guy in preseason and he tears his ACL, everyone's going to second guess you. What was he doing in the game? What, it's a meaningless game. Why was he in there? And then if you don't play your guys in preseason and you start off with a loss against Philly, well, if you would have practiced guys and played more in preseason, you probably would have won that game, right? So you better hope in this situation that if you go out and play guys, that guys don't get hurt. And that if you, regardless, right, that you go out and you play your wild card game and you get that win. And that's what Matt LaFleur is looking at. And he did bring up, you know, previously when they did this, they had a week 18 game. It was 17 or 18. I forget if there was 16 or 17 games in the season at that time, but where they played their starters half the game. And then they went out in their first preseason game and they lost, or first postseason game and they lost. So he's trying to make the corrections necessary to hope that the team goes out, you know, plays really well and can hopefully carry that over into the wild card round. I don't think there's a perfect answer here. I think you have to trust the coach to have the pulse of the team and understand what he thinks is best for the team. And if someone gets hurt, it's unfortunate, but it's sort of the cost of doing business. It sucks, but he feels like the best thing to do is to play these guys and get them ready for the postseason. I tend to agree, but again, I can guarantee you, if all of a sudden you go out and Tucker Kraft or Romeo Doubs or Josh Jacobs, somebody goes out and gets hurt and is out for even 1 week of the playoffs, he's going to hear about it. But if he rests guys and they go out in the wild card game and lose, he's going to hear about it. It's a complete damned if you do, damned if you don't. So whatever he decides, I'm not that it matters, but I totally support. I'm not going to second guess it either way. Totally, totally transparent, because I don't think there's a good answer to the question. And he feels like he wants to play him, so play him. Let's see what they can, let's see what they got. Hopefully they can go out again, dominate Chicago early, get some of those guys out by halftime, and still gain that, you know, important momentum going into that wild card game. All right, with that, let's get to our main topic for today, and that is Jair Alexander. He is out for the season, it would seem. More on that in just a moment. I want to start by saying this sucks for everybody. There's no winner here. I guess maybe if you're Carrington Valentine or Eric Stokes or like one of those guys where you get more playing time, or the guy that takes Jair's spot on the 53-man roster, there might be a small, slight winner there. But for the most part, this is a bad thing for everyone. This is bad for the Green Bay Packers. This is bad for your postseason and your hopes of going on a significant run. This is bad for Jair. You know, he's now piling up missed games and did not plays on his record and on his resume. We'll talk about how many of those in just a second as well. But it's not a great look for his career, just that he has not been able to stay healthy for the better part of four seasons now. Like, that's a problem. And for Jair, I guarantee he wants to be out there with his team. For all of the, you know, talk, the drivel, whatever we want to call it, of that he's quitting on his team or he got paid, go and read the Athletic article with Jair Alexander that Matt Schneidman did. He, during the bye week, he stayed, he did everything. He rehabbed and rehabbed and rehabbed, did everything he could to get ready for that Chicago Bear game and get ready to come back and get back as soon as he possibly could. Now, Green Bay and Jair maybe mismanaged that. We'll talk about that as well. But this is not a player that was in a position that is like wanted to quit on this team. Go back to some of the post-game videos earlier in the year. Like, he's breaking down the team at the end of like a big win. Like, he's the guy. Like, it's Matt LaFleur's doing his thing, handing out game balls. And then at the end of it, Jair's breaking everyone down. Like, this is a player that was a huge part of the DNA of the 2024 Packers. Had the pick six earlier in this season. Like, he was a big time performer for this team. And a, again, a big part of this, the DNA of this team. For it to go from he was playing well, everyone was on the same page, and then, you know, like, there was no issues whatsoever. He has an injury. He does everything he can, stays in Green Bay during the bye week, rehabs it, comes back, goes against Chicago, has to shut it down, re-aggravates it, and then now is, you know, just had surgery. It's awful for everyone. So there's no winners here. And for Jair's standpoint, I hope he works his way back, becomes an all-pro corner again, and you know, gets back to health the way that he needs to, whether he's a Green Bay Packer or not. You know, hoping the best for him, and hoping obviously that the Packers corners, Eric Stokes, Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine, etc., can step up and play really big in his absence moving forward. As far as the injury timeline, Adam Schefter did report that this was a minor scope and that it's not a major surgery. And there is a slight possibility, or at least some possibility, that he could be back for the Super Bowl. Meaning if Green Bay does make it all the way to the Super Bowl, and you know that Jair could maybe be back by then. I wouldn't hold your breath on a variety of different things. Now, Green Bay just getting to the Super Bowl is going to be difficult enough in and of itself, right? And even if you get to that point, you know, even if Jair finally gets that PCL kind of where he wants it, are you going to push it back immediately? Are you going to have somebody who hasn't, you know, played at all since, you know, well earlier in the year come in after you just made this run through the NFC? I find it hard to believe, even if Green Bay wins and gets to the Super Bowl, that Jair is going to have any real significant impact on that game. Even if he's, you know, right there, just got healthy, man, getting your legs back underneath you, the conditioning, just all of that, I find that hard to believe. So even if Green Bay finds a way to navigate themselves to the Super Bowl, I would not hold your breath that Jair Alexander would play in that game. Crazier things have happened. You never quite know. Maybe the surgery went phenomenal and it's just all of a sudden it's a miracle heal and everything goes really well, really fast. But barring something like that, I can't imagine that that's probably going to be the case. But, you know, crazier things, I guess, have happened. But apparently there is at least some small possibility he could be back in that timeline. We're just going to obviously have to wait and see. And Green Bay's got a lot of heavy lifting to do just to get to that point in the first place. I will still say that now we finally have our explanation, right? That it's a PCL. We knew it was a PCL injury. We knew there was some sort of tear there. We knew he re-aggravated it. And now we know that he had to have surgery. So it was worse than anyone was hoping for. And it was not getting better. He kept, sounds like, kind of re-aggravating it. And they opted for surgery. Now, whether that was just Jair's ultimate decision, whether the Packers wanted him to get surgery, whether they were both on the same page, I don't know. To me, this still doesn't answer all the weirdness of everything. But maybe, I don't know, is the honest truth. Maybe it's that when Matt LaFleur got sort of pissy about it, he was just pissy about answering the question every day. Now, I hate that because, like, just answer the question, I guess. But maybe he was just more frustrated that he had to keep talking about it and not specifically at Jair. It still feels a degree off to me, but I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. Maybe there's something there. Sometimes when there's smoke, there's fire. And sometimes it's just much ado about nothing. Maybe the franchise and Jair Alexander are 100% aligned. Maybe they've been 100% aligned on this process the entire time. Or maybe there's been some bumping of heads. Maybe there's been some frustration between parties. And this is just the final nail of, hey, we're going to shut it down. He needs to get his surgery. We need to move on in a different direction. And it's going to go in a variety of different, like, we're going to have to wait and see. But it still, to me, does not totally answer all of the semi-oddness that has seemingly been surrounding the situation. But it very well just could be that that's our outside perspective of it. And that's not exactly what's going on inside 1265. And to be clear, there has not been a report from Bat Schneidman or Jason Wilde or Pete Doherty or Ryan Wood or any Packers beat guy or anyone that covers the team that I'm aware of that has said that there is a major falling out or butting of heads between Jair and the Packers. It seems that everyone kind of thinks that's the case, that that's kind of the conclusion that everyone's kind of made some sort of jump to, but I have not personally seen any sort of report on that. And it is kind of just leaving us in the dark. What happens next, meaning what happens in the offseason, I think will tell us a lot more as to what Green Bay and Jair and where both of these parties are at and if they want to continue working together moving forward. But there's going to be a lot that goes into that decision as well. Before we get into that side of things, before we get into 2025 Jair Alexander, at least 2025-26 season Jair Alexander, we need to talk about how this affects the Packers in the here and the now. It's a brutal blow for the secondary. And listen, I will be the first to say, after, you know, saying for a while that Stokes has been struggling, he's played a few pretty good games here and he has held his own. Kudos to him. I think some people at times feel like I have this guy that I just pick on and don't like, and then he starts doing well and I'm still going to not like him, or I'm still going to pick on him. No, this is, for me, when I go through the grades, the grade is what I'm talking to you guys about. It's not my personal opinion of said players. I could care less. I want Eric Stokes to do awesome. I hope he goes out and tears it up and plays at an all-pro level every freaking game. So yeah, he's playing well the past few weeks. Do I think that erases the entirety of the rest of the season, the year before that? No, not quite. But I'm intrigued. I'm super happy with it. And I'm interested to see if he can kind of keep this going. And I think Keyshawn Nixon's played some pretty decent football. I think Carrington Valentine's come up with some big plays. I think it's a little bit more volatile, some high highs, some lower lows, but I think he's playing some pretty good football too. I think they've held their own. Now, in large part, that's what Jeff Hafley's asking them to do. Not a lot of man coverage. You know, you can't go man against Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison with those corners. It's not going to end well, especially when you don't have a pass rush. It's a nightmare scenario. So I think Jeff's done a really great job of putting them in positions to succeed, but they're succeeding too. I don't think that this is some catastrophic corner group that you just cannot win with at all. I don't believe that. I think they've been a little bit better than that. We'll see how they want to integrate Javon Bullard into that when Evan Williams hopefully comes back. You do have good safeties. We'll talk about how the pass rush factors into that, but I think they can somewhat survive the corners to some extent, but it really limits what Jeff Hafley can do on the back end, and it starts getting a little bit predictable. You're having a hand tied behind your back because you really just can't do a ton of man-to-man stuff. So you're just cycling between different zone defenses and trying to disguise it as best as you can. And at some point, teams start to catch on to that a lot more, and it just makes you less, more predictable because they know you're not going man. So you can just dial up zone beaters all day. And you're going to hit on a decent amount of them because they're not changing it up to man defense all that much.
Hey friends, we're about to kick off the new year and there's no better way to start 2025 than by winning. And right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money. And that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts like Taco Tuesday, when Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineups. Make your Prize Picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Caleb Williams to throw at least one interception, Brandon McManus to connect on two or more field goals, and I'm going to take as many Packers sacks as I can get. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game.
And when you look at the playoffs and the potential matchups, well, if it's Philly, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, you would like a Jair. Even though Jair struggled against A.J. Brown in that first game against Philly, you would still like Jair in that game. If you end up playing the Lions again, Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, you'd certainly like to have Jair for those matchups. The Vikings, of course, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, you would love to have Jair out there. The Rams, Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, you'd love to have Jair. Even if you get matched up with, the Buccaneers, Mike Evans, to have Jair out there for him would be huge. Even the Commanders, which is probably the best case scenario from a corner wide receiver standpoint, you still have Terry McLaurin that you'd like to have Jair out there for. It just, no matter what teams they face over the course of this postseason, it's a tough ask without Jair being out there. and it makes the pass rush that much more important. And it makes guys like Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, Javon Bullard super, super important with how they play the remainder of the season. Now, from Next Gen Stats, and this is per Zach Cruz, who posted this out there, the Packers with Jaire Alexander on the field this past season allowed a 61% completion percentage and a 77.5 passer rating, again, with Jaire on the field. With him off the field, that completion percentage goes from 61 to 70.7, and the passer rating goes from 77.5 to 95.3. So you're completing 9.7% of your passes, and your passer rating jumps almost 18 full points. Like, that is a ridiculously massive gap between having Jaire on the field and not on the field. So his loss is going to be felt to a very great extent, and it has been felt to a very great extent when he has not been out there. And again, it just really makes things difficult for Jeff Hafley as he's trying to go out there and call defenses where he doesn't have his top cover corner. Makes things very, very hard. One of the questions that I immediately saw was, well, why didn't, you know, Green Bay knew Jaire was a little bit beat up at the deadline. Like, why didn't Green Bay make more of an effort to trade for a corner at the deadline? Well, trades don't just happen because you want them to happen. It takes two to tango. It takes another team to say, hey, we have this corner available. Would you like to trade for them? And there were two corners that were traded at the deadline, Marshon Lattimore and Tre'Davious White. Now, Tre'Davious White could not even get on the field for the Rams, and he looked completely washed. And to give up anything for, like, and the Rams needed corners, and they would not play Tre'Davious White. And he had bounced around, like, it was looking like he was basically done. Now, that I think the Ravens swapped seventh round picks, so they gave up almost nothing for Tre'Davious White. He's played okay for them. He's been a part-time player in their secondary, playing about 20, 25 snaps per game, and he's been, per PFF, fine, like an average-ish player. Could they have done something like that? Sure. My guess, quite frankly, if I'm being totally transparent, I don't think they would have played Tre'Davious White over Stokes, Valentine, or Keyshawn Nixon. I think he would have been the next guy up. Now, maybe that depth would have helped. It would have been nice to have that depth piece there. Instead of maybe Corey Ballantyne, if another corner goes down, I don't think it would have changed things all that much. I really, really don't. So that's one, you can just kind of scratch it off. And then Marshon Lattimore. Well, Marshon Lattimore certainly would have helped, right? Yes, Marshon Lattimore has been hurt almost as much as Jaire Alexander. He's only played in two games for Washington since the trade deadline, the last two, but he was out a huge chunk of time, and Washington paid an exorbitant cost to go get him, which I can understand why Goody did not want to give up that cost, especially when Lattimore was hurt and was going to miss still a huge chunk of this year. And you didn't exactly know when he was going to come back from injury. So there was a lot of risk that went along with that as well. And even if he's back right now, Lattimore has had a history of injuries as well. So kind of doubling down on another injured corner, or at least oft injured corner, I can understand why Goody didn't want to go in that direction. And there were no other corners that were traded. And Goody made specific mention in his press conference right after the trade deadline that there just weren't teams that were looking to trade away players or sell at the deadline. So you can't conjure something up because, like, I need a corner. You team, you trade me that corner. And it's like, no, we're not interested. We're competing still. It's like, all right. When you have, by the way, seven seeds in both conferences, it's going to make teams say, you know what, we're going to keep shooting for one of those seven seeds and try to get in the playoffs. Fewer and fewer teams are going to sell at the deadline. And that may make it harder for deals to get done. And I think that's exactly what happened at the trade deadline this year. Teams like Miami, for instance, who were really struggling, were still trying to make that push. And understandably so, because going into the final week of the season, they are not eliminated yet. They just need two things to go their way. They need to win, and they need the Broncos to lose to the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs are setting their starters down, so it's a good chance that Denver wins and they don't get in anyway, but you can, like, they're still fighting at this point. Had they traded away guys like Calais Campbell, Kendall Fuller, et cetera, maybe they're not in that position today. It's a tough situation, but I'm sure Goody would have loved to have made some upgrades at the deadline, but when there's not opportunities that present themselves, you can't force it. And I thought, you know, neither of those corner deals made a ton of sense for Green Bay to make. And again, I don't think there was really much else out there for Green Bay to go and get. Another question that I've seen come up quite a bit is, why didn't he get the surgery back in week 8 when this initially happened? Well, the first thing is it sounds like it wasn't that bad when it first happened. And then he re-aggravated it when he played against Chicago. And then it just, you know, he continued to work his way back and continue to have these setbacks. It, with the benefit of hindsight, do you change that up? You know, maybe, probably. Yes, for sure. But there are different things that can happen. Like, it's not like this thing set in stone where it's like, oh, PCL injury. Oh, he's automatically going to be out 6 weeks. Let's put him on IR, or let's get him that surgery now and get him back after 6 weeks. Like, every injury is a little bit different. And sometimes, especially if there's swelling, inflammation, and I'm not a doctor, but I'm just like, if there's things that are like, that you can't maybe tell quite as much right away, like sometimes you have to give it time to figure out, is this something that just needs rest? Is this something that needs surgery? Or some, and sometimes too, like you get, and this is why players go for second opinions and things like that. You know, doctor or team physician might say, we think you should have surgery. And the player might say, no, if I have surgery, that's going to set me out for too long. And another doctor might say, hey, if you rest it, you might get back a little bit quicker, but it may, you know, it could take longer too, but then you could avoid surgery. Like, there's all these different things that go into it. And then players are going to look towards what's their best long-term interest as well. So there's not this perfect scenario where if you get this injury, then do this, and this is how long you're going to be out. It can vary wildly, and it can be dependent on a player, how quickly they heal, exactly the injury that they had. Like, there's so much that goes into that. So with the benefit of hindsight, yeah, just, you know, set them down longer or get him the surgery right away, and he probably would have been back for the playoffs. But it doesn't work that way. And he worked his way back. He rehabbed. He was ready to go for Chicago. They tried it out on the field. He felt good to go. It didn't work. He had the setback, and everything just kind of crumbled from there. And we'll talk more about that here in just a second as well. And actually, here, we'll talk about it right now. The next question then, of course, is, did the Packers mismanage the situation? Let me start by saying, I think Green Bay has a very strong medical staff and training staff and everything like that to support the players and help make these decisions. I think no matter what, even regardless of what they knew, and maybe they didn't know exactly, you know, obviously they didn't know the future, didn't maybe know the severity of it or whatever, to rush him back in that Chicago game where they had to work him out pregame and see if he could go and put him on a snap count because he was only going to play so many snaps, that to me always felt foolhardy. Like, why are you rushing him back to play Chicago? To me, it always should have been, let's get him back as close to 100% as possible with no potential setbacks. He's far too important of a player. We can manage this for the time being. We need him back at the end of the year to make a run at this thing. I know that's easy for me to say on the outside looking in. I know that's easy for me to say with the benefit of hindsight. But even at the time, when you have to work him out pregame, he's questionable all week, and it's not sure if he's going to be able to go, or even if he goes, he's going to be on a snap count. Why? Why rush a player like that back? Or really kind of almost any player, but it doesn't really seem to make total sense in that situation. And I think it really ended up costing Green Bay, and it cost Jair. And they're now going to have to go in the playoffs without their best cover corner. And that's a killer. It's an absolute killer. So yes, I do think there is some blame on Green Bay, the organization's hands, for how they handled this situation. How much you want to put on that is your prerogative. I don't think it's, you know, this fireable offense, or I don't think it's anything that we need to dwell on. I don't think it's anything we need to probably talk about ever again, but it's a miscue. It's a misfire. It was a mistake. Shouldn't have happened. And you hope that they learn from this. You hope that they take it maybe a little bit more easy with some of these players. I'll just add on top of that, it's a very like difficult thing. Like, I understand this. There's this always this push pull, right? Of like, well, teams want players to play even when they're banged up and go out there. You have to have that. Everyone's banged up. If all of a sudden everyone starts being like, well, I've got this and I want to make sure it's 100%, you're going to have like 25 guys left on your roster that are playing. And you can't bring all these guys back from IR. Like, you have to have guys play through pain, play hurt. So there's this tendency to be like, yeah, get back out there. It's almost like a prerequisite. It's almost something that has to happen from a team standpoint, that you have to continue to push players to be like, yeah, I'm sorry, but sort of the business. You have to go out. And of course, there's a difference between hurt and injured. And that's where this push-pull always comes. Are you hurt? All right, you got to play through it. If you're injured, all right, sit down. And this is where, again, there's this constant, always gray area of where is the player? And sometimes the player and the coaching staff, or not the coaching staff, but maybe the training staff, whatever, the medical staff feels they are in a different area than what they are. And it's not an easy equation, but it is the tendency of teams to be like, you're hurt. Yeah, we still need you. But if you are injured and there's this risk of re-injury, you got to be really careful with it. And Green Bay probably overpressed this one, and it is going to come back to haunt them because it is a major, major loss for this secondary and this team moving forward. So yes, I do think there was some mismanagement. Now, the big question, the one that I think everyone wants to talk about, and I think they feel like they have some inkling of the decision here, and I think you really have to be cognizant of all the things that go into this. So will Jair Alexander be back with the Packers in 2025? And I know it seems to be akin to a political argument where there are two extremes. And the one extreme says he can never stay on the field. It's the easiest decision ever. Get rid of the guy. And some people even go further. It's a locker room cancer. I don't know how you could possibly know that. There's been no reports of that. There was the suspension last year, but even then teammates kind of had his back. So whatever, that's the one extreme, right? Gone. No question about it. And then I got the other side, which I was kind of a little bit more surprised by, if I'm being honest, but the other side of like, of course he's going to be back. He's the Packers' best cover corner. And they don't have good corners. Like, why in the world would you get rid of Jair Alexander? Well, let's talk through that, because let me start by saying, I don't think it's a easy cut and dry convert or like decision one way or the other. I do think there is a way that I am very much leaning, and we'll go over why in great detail. I think the first thing that you need to know, and this is per Zach Jacobson, who did the research on this, Jair has missed 20 of his last 34 games now after this weekend. And it'll be more than that, because it'll be one more going into at least one more with the postseason game that he'll miss. So, but 20 of 34 that he has missed. In addition, he will have missed 34 of his last 68 games after this weekend. That's 50% of the games. That's a ton of games. That's over four seasons of games he has missed half the time. That is a ton of time to miss, regardless of who you are. If you're going to miss half the time that you are expected to be out there over a four-year period of time, that is a significant amount of time to miss. And it makes you question, what is the expectation for what he's going to be able to play moving forward? If you bring him back for another season, your expectation has got to be, we're probably not getting 17 games plus playoffs out of that guy. Is it 10 games? Is it 12? Is it four? Is it six? You're playing a little bit of Russian roulette with that thing. You don't know exactly what it's going to end up on, and you don't know exactly how many games you're going to get. But to expect anything more than half is probably foolhardy, because he hasn't shown that he can do that over a four-year period of time. So that is number one that you have to look at, is you are paying not for who Jair was, you're paying for who you think he's going to be. And in that projection, you have to bake in playing time and expectations of what you think he is going to be able to play, and how you could look at a four-year period of time where he's missed half the time and say, yeah, I think he's going to play all of next year. I think that would be probably a pretty bad way to put those expectations and analysis together as you're trying to make this decision. I mean, maybe you get 75%. That's probably what you're hoping as a best case scenario, is that maybe you get 75% of the season with Jair next year. But anything, you know, beyond that, you're probably just wishful thinking. You might as well go to the casino and, you know, spin a roulette wheel, because you're just hoping the numbers come up right. It's just pure dumb luck and hope at that point. But you can't go into the season expecting it when he's missed that much time over four seasons. Now, Jair, the player? Well, let's talk about it from a PFF standpoint. This is since 2021. In 2021, he had a 73.4 grade. 2022, an 80.3 grade. 2023, 75.9. And 2024, 75.2. That is a good to really good NFL corner through those four seasons. Worst grade was a 73.4 in 2021. Best was an 80.3 in 2022. Like a good range, good solid corner, good grades. For me, in 2021, in just those five games, I had a plus 2.9 grade on him. In 2022, I had a plus 0.8. 2023, -1.0, 2024, +0.75. But here's the big discrepancy for me when I look at my grades. Pre-2021 injury. So remember, the shoulder injury was 2021. All right. Prior to that injury in 2021, from 2018 to 2021, prior to the injury, he had a +32.45 grade over that 3+ seasons. +32.45. Just absolute stud, all pro caliber player, unbelievable player. Post-injury, 2021 post-injury, that one game and the divisional round in 2021, and then 2022, 2023, 2024 for what he's played so far, +0.5 grade. You're talking about, for me, going from a all-pro slash Pro Bowl caliber corner to a average to solid good corner. That's a drop-off, all right? And I'm not saying that he's not talented, good cover corner, not a value add. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying there is a difference. It's another thing that you have to play into the equation of, even if you look at PFF, that's like, you're not talking about, he had like a 90 grade 1 year prior to the injuries. Like, that's all pro caliber corner. Now you're talking about 75s and 73s more often than not. It's still good. It's a really good corner. Green Bay's best corner, no question about it. Same thing for me, is like, he's still grading, you know, mostly well, but the difference between a +32.45 grade and a +0.5 grade is pretty significant. So even when he is out there, he's not quite making the same impact that he once was when he was in his prime. Next thing you have to look at is the cornerback depth chart. Well, Carrington Valentine's under contract next year. Keyshawn Nixon's under contract. I would be stunned if he's going anywhere. And then you have two guys on the practice squad, Kalen King and Kamal Haddon, who will get future reserve deals, or, you know, basically, you know, cheap 1 year deals going into next year. That's it. That's your corner depth chart. Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, Kalen King, Kamal Haddon. They're going to need to add some pieces. And if they lose Jair Alexander, that is a pretty big gap for where they are. Eric Stokes is a free agent. Robert Rochelle is a free agent. So they don't have a ton in the cupboard at that specific spot. So without Jair, you're talking about a pretty significant rebuild at that position. And then, of course, we need to get to the biggest thing here, which is the salary cap and what he would cost against the cap if he were to be brought back. And this is where the biggest misconceptions are. And this is going to get a little numbery. I apologize in advance, but I'll explain it in pretty simple terms as we kind of go through this, or at least as simple as I can. In 2025, this upcoming season, he is set to have a $16.15 million base salary with a $7.88 million prorated bonus and $1.35 million in additional roster bonuses, which would make his salary cap hit $25.4 million this upcoming season. If they were to release him, he would have a dead cap charge of $18.1 million. So the math is pretty simple here. $25.38 million is what his salary cap hit is. If he has a dead cap hit of 18.1, if you release him, you get a savings of $7.27 million next year by releasing him. And that is what everyone is talking about, that you save $7.27 million. And everyone wants to immediately jump to the conclusion of, well, if all I'm saving is $7 million, of course I'm going to keep Jair Alexander. Why in the world would you not keep Jair Alexander on a one-year $7.3 million deal and hope that he stays healthy, because he's easily your best corner when he's out there? I very much understand that assessment, if that were the correct assessment, and it very much 1,000,000% is not. Yes, that is the right math. $7.27 million is what you would save in 2025. However, you also have to account for 2026 and 2027. If they release him in 2025, yes, you would have a $7.3 million savings, 7.27, I'll just round it up to $7.3 million savings, but you would also have zero cap hit for him in 2026 and zero cap hit for him in 2027. So he is off the books after this year, which is going to give you additional savings as well. If you keep him, all right, you're thinking, again, it's only $7.27 million to keep him. Why would I not keep him? But here's what you would actually be doing. You would pay him $25.4 million, what we talked about, what he's set to make, $25.38 million in 2025. Then, if you were to release him in 2026, the following year, you would have $10.2 million in dead cap hit in 2026. So it's a total of $35.6 million against the cap in 2025 and 2026 for 1 year of playing him. If you cut him, you have $18.1 million, remember, in dead cap hit. So you are actually saving $17.5 million total in salary cap space over the course of the next three seasons by releasing him this year. $17.5 million. So the correct question to ask yourself is not, would I keep him for 1 year, $7.3 million? That is not the correct roster determination here. Yes, that would be the $7.3 million savings that you would get in 2025, but you'd also then have a 10.2 million dollar cap hit in 2026. So the total contract for Jaire Alexander to keep him one more year is 1 year, $17.5 million. The question you need to ask yourself is, would I sign Jaire Alexander if you were a free agent, all right? If you were a free agent tomorrow or once the season is done and you could sign Jaire Alexander to a 1 year, $17.5 million deal, understanding that he has not played more than 50% of the snaps over his last 4 years combined. Understanding that while he's been a good corner, he's not been a great slash elite corner, even when he's been on the field. Understanding that he had a suspension a year ago for going out and trying to be team captain and having some other stuff that had kind of piled up behind the scenes. Is that a player that you want to spend a 1 year, $17.5 million deal on? If your answer is yes, okay, that's fine. That is your determination. I can't get there, and I'll talk about that more in just a moment, but that's the question that you need to be asked. It's not just a $7.27 million savings. It is a $17.5 million savings over the next couple years if you were to release him now. He has 2 years left on his deal. So here's the kind of simple way of looking at it. If you release him, you have an $18.1 million cap hit, and then you are done with him. You have no other future salary cap hits, just 18.1 mil dead this year. That does have a $7.3 million savings to it as well. So you're not going, you know, taking on a huge, you know, aggressive pay cut that you can't pay for. You're actually saving money by releasing them even this year, but you're going to pay $18.1 million against the cap. By the way, that money's already paid for. It's bonus money. So it's already paid for. It's not any more that they're giving him. It's just counting against the cap. Next year, 18.1 mil dead. All right. So you, if he's gone, 18.1 million dead is all you've got. If you keep him 1 year, you have 35.6 million total spent, 25.4 mil in 2025 and 10.2 mil in 2026 against the cap. All right. And if you keep him 2 years, you have 55.1 million against the cap, 25.4 in 2025, 27.4 in 2026, and 2.4 in 2027. So take that 18.1 million out as the common denominator, okay? That was already paid. You're going to have it go against the salary cap at some point, no matter what. Take that out. If you're done with him, you pay him zero additional dollars on top of that 18.1 mil that you've already paid him. And that's already going to have to go against the cap in some capacity. You have zero additional dollars that you're paying him. If you add him one more year on your team, you pay him $17.5 million additional to what you're paying him if you were to release him. And if you were to pay him for two more years, if you were to have him, you know, play out the remainder of his contract, then it would be $37 million that he would cost for 2 years. So the question one more time is, do you want to be done? Take your $18.1 million medicine now and never have to worry about it again? No more future dead cap hits? Or do you want him for one more year at 17.5 mil, or do you want him at 2 years, 37 mil? That is the question that you need to ask yourself. Your determination, you can make your ultimate conclusion there, but just know it's not this $7.5 million. It is $17.5 million that you have to consider here as to what you are saving if you were to release him on the 1 year, you know, just with, you know, taking the dead cap hit now. It's probably the smart way to go. And then, of course, the next question becomes, all right, we're moving on from Jaire. We're not going to pay him 17.5 mil. That's going to be done with. Is there trade value? Maybe. What you'd be getting for a team that would be trading for him is a two-year, $37 million non-guaranteed contract with 17.5 mil in 2025. The question becomes, think of it this way. Do you want to give Jair 1 year, $17.5 million deal? If your answer is yes, then you probably don't want to trade him. If your answer is no, then is another team going to want to get him 1 year, $17.5 million? Now they can renegotiate with Jair. They can, you know, give Green Bay a draft pick to be the ones that take that deal on and then have the first right to renegotiate. The beautiful thing with the contract is that it's all non-guaranteed. So yes, you get him at 237, but it's all completely non-guaranteed. So if Jair does, like, they can't come to a, you know, a conclusion, they can't come to a renegotiation, they can just release him and be done with it, which would lend me to believe that if Green Bay is able to make any trade, if some team does want the ability to bring on Jair and renegotiate that contract before he's a free agent, if Green Bay were to cut him and he gets to negotiate with every team, then it would be a conditional pick that would be coming Green Bay's way. Probably something conditioned on how many games he played, if he became an all-pro. I could see something where it starts as like a, I think it's probably less than this, by the way, but maybe it's something where it's like a sixth round pick or maybe a fifth round pick. We'll just say a fifth round pick to make it easy. That can move to a fourth round pick if he becomes a Pro Bowler. That moves to a sixth round pick if he misses half the games, and moves to a seventh round pick if he, you know, only plays four games or fewer, like something like that. Or that moves to nothing if they release him before the start of the season. Like, there's probably different ways to build that, but I would not expect anything significant in return. Because again, if you don't want to, just think, if you don't want Green Bay to keep him at 1 year, $17.5 million, some other team's probably not going to want to give up, not only have him at 1 year, $17.5 million, but plus also give up draft capital to be able to pay him for that. And if Green Bay again is saying, no, we're good with it, other teams might take that as well. They also know that Green Bay, if they start shopping him around, is more likely to just release him. And then you can probably just get him for free. Now you have to battle other teams that might also be interested, which is why, again, I could see some team giving up a conditional pick for him, but I don't think it's going to be anything more than that. My suggestion to you would be expect nothing and be happy if they get anything. And then that brings us to kind of the last piece of this conversation is, well, if he is gone, what does Green Bay do at corner? Well, they're going to have to draft and they're going to have to probably sign a free agent. So who's out there? Well, I'm just looking at the consensus draft board. I've studied a little bit of Will Johnson earlier in the year, but outside of that, haven't looked at any of these guys. Travis Hunter is currently number two on the overall consensus draft board. Obviously, he'll be gone by the time Green Bay's picking. Same thing with Will Johnson. He's number five. Siobhan Revelle Jr. is at number 20. He could be gone. He's also coming off an ACL injury. Benjamin Morrison's at number 26 out of Notre Dame. J.D. Barron, number 40 out of Texas, and then Trey Amos, number 49 out of Ole Miss. Those could be players that Green Bay targets in the first couple rounds. But of course, they could take players all throughout the draft as well. And then there's also free agency. It's actually a pretty deep free agency class at corner. DJ Reed of the Jets, Tre'Varius Ward for the Niners, Rasul Douglas, old friend for the Buffalo Bills, Carlton Davis for the Lions, Asante Samuel Jr. for the Chargers, Byron Murphy Jr. for the Vikings, Mike Hilton for the Bengals, all are unrestricted free agents. And then, of course, there will be other players that will likely get released as well that Green Bay could also look at come free agency time. So it would be a position that they'd have to rebuild, but I think that would be something they'd be very aggressive in doing, likely taking multiple draft picks, probably in the first four or five rounds, and then also signing at least one really big time free agent to help make up for the loss of Jair Alexander. And just think of it this way, you know, you could get one of those really good corners for less than, you know, a 1 year, $17.5 million deal and replace Jair with one of those players, and then still go out and attack that position via the draft and maybe go in with, I mean, maybe a Carlton Davis, and then you still have Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, and two, you know, top 100 draft picks or top 125 draft picks. Like, they could still go and really be aggressive in rebuilding that room, even if they do move on from Jair Alexander. One last thing that I'll add in regards to this decision is, because there are no bonuses that kick in at any point, there's no deadline to make this decision. So one thing Green Bay could do is kind of what they did with Aaron Jones. Keep Aaron Jones on the roster until you found a better replacement. if they go into free agency saying, we want to get one of these really good corners, but we're not going to let go of Jaire until we have that player in hand, they could do that. They could say, we're going to go and be aggressive getting DJ Reed, but we're going to hold on to Jaire just in case if all of a sudden DJ Reed signs somewhere else and Chavarius Ward stays with the Niners and Carlton Davis stays with the Lions and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden they strike out at corner free agency. They could say, all right, we're going to stick with Jaire. Or it could be they sign DJ Reed day one of free agency and it's immediately see you later, Jaire. Like they could hold off on that, or they could just make the decision right away as well. But there is no March 1st deadline or anything that they need to make this determination by. So this could be something that does go a little bit further into the offseason if they feel it necessary. And if they do want to see if they can go and get a better corner first before ultimately making that decision and then moving on once they have that corner in hand. Could be. I'm not saying they will do it that way, but it could be a way that they do it. As to just kind of wrap things up here, it sucks all the way around. You wish that if this is the end of the Jaire era in Green Bay, that would have ended on a much better note. This is not the way that anyone wanted this to go down, and you hate to see players get hurt and just suffer injuries that really make it debilitating for their career, which is basically what's been happening with Jaire Alexander. Just hasn't been the same player completely and just hasn't been able to stay out on the field. And that totally and completely sucks for everyone involved. It certainly puts more pressure on the pass rush. It also puts more pressure on guys like Eric Stokes, Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, Javon Bullard, the safeties. They're going to have to step up, play really good football. I think they have been doing a better job of that, but it's going to have to probably be even better if they want to make a legitimate run through this postseason. And then last but not least, what would I do? You can probably tell by now, $17.5 million for 1 year when he hasn't been able to stay healthy, when he hasn't been quite the same, when there has been maybe some contention, a previous suspension, and it hasn't been all hunky-dory this entire time. Can't do it. Can't bring myself to do it. For me, it would be a pretty easy decision that Jaire would, you know, probably have played his last down in Green Bay and he gets to go find something new for him. And I hope he goes out and finds all that success and Green Bay can go find a new corner for themselves and probably multiple, right? That's probably the direction I would go. I would lean towards that's the direction that Green Bay would go as well. If I were betting today, I would guess that Jaire is not back. Now, some people might point to, could there be some sort of restructure here? Possible, yes. Likely, I don't think so. I think Jaire is just going to say, and that's if you go to him with a restructure, he's going to say, no way. And I think he's just going to say, I would rather find something on the open market. And I think understandably so. It feels like this was a divorce that's been kind of happening in real time. And I think that divorce comes to fruition in the offseason. And it feels like the right time for both sides. It feels like it's probably time for Green Bay to go in a different direction, get some new bodies in that corner room, especially when Jaire can't stay healthy. And it feels like Jaire just needs a reboot, fresh coat of paint, get him somewhere new, and hopefully he can take off and play great somewhere else. Just hopefully it's not in the NFC North, right? That's my take on it. I don't expect him to be back. I would not continue with him based on the contract that he's at, and I do not expect a restructure. Sucks all the way around. Not saying it's a foregone conclusion. We're going to have to wait and see. We'll take it one step at a time. And again, I don't think anything's set in stone at this point, and certainly nobody's reported on anything. But if you look at the money, I think it's going to be really hard to kind of bring him back at that 17.5 mil number. And I just don't see Green Bay doing that. We'll wait and see, though. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I know a lot of numbers. I know a lot to discuss with this. It's going to be a very interesting decision for Green Bay moving forward. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Ritaka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Guestford, Step Keat, Love and Football, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, and Chris Rager. I will see you guys all soon, but until next time, and as always, Go Pack Go.